So, dear friends, so tonight we'll continue to study. Last Tuesday we have share about, what did we share about Tuesday? It's good to always to get some my speech and body. And I think that is very essential in our in the Buddhist practice. You know, we talk a lot about that. That is the main thing we have to work. And that's what we have, body, speech, and mind. And I think it's regardless of religions, but maybe in Christianity or some other religion also talk, but in Buddhism we are very much emphasize the practice of the body, speech, and mind. And that is where all the the fruits of the practice is born, if we know how to use it wisely. But at the same time, it's also all the negative fruits where it's come from. Because if we don't know how to use our body, our speech and our mind, then we can go into the wrong directions. And then that is where we create or generate a lot of negativities. And that is where pain and sufferings, mental afflictions arise. But at the same time, if we are a wise practitioner, that is where all the enlightenment, the Buddha was born from that. The Bodhisattva, the saint, the Arahat, also born from that, because they know how to use this wisely and skillfully. So every day I think we need to have some practice on our bodies, our speech and our mind, and contemplate on that, how to use the body skillfully. We have, if we don't know how to use, then we have used our body in the wrong way. And then the more we walk in that direction, we deviate our path. And then we have a lot of body attachment. You ever realize that, sit down, contemplate how much we attach to our body? See the hair that you try to cut every time, every month you go to a barber shop and cut your hair. That means you are somehow that you, some sense of attachment to our body, our external beauty. And especially our female sister or female friend, then we have to buy a lot of expensive makeup. Right, yeah, this it's costly.
Some, yeah.
okay, sorry. some. And that's very costly. You know, that's external makeup, very costly. And we spend a lot of sweat on that.
It's kind of scary if you don't use it, though.
Yes. You
it's
and
scary. If you don't use it, you could scare other people.
So see?
That's not a good thing.
You see, you know, but that's kind of, and then that is a it's very temporary beauty, you know, and we spend a lot of time, you know, and when I drive, you know, many times I saw like our female friend, you know, drive and they just put on and then it's very dangerous for and that is also costly. It can cost life for that, you know, if you are not practicing mindfully, and while you join, you put on your makeup. Because you don't have time, you know, you sleep late, and you wake up and you were so hurried to go to work, and then, you know, you have, while you join, then you try to put on your makeup. And it can cost life, it can cost life. And I saw that very often, very often, especially when it's traffic, when it's in traffic, and you slow down, and then you know you try, you know, and you not very, you don't pay attention, you can cause life, you know. So and then it's so that we have a certain degree of attachment to our bodies, more or less, you know, if you practice well. So that is kind of we try it's kind of a beauty, external beauty, right? Even men too, men, we have to shave our beard, and you know, once every 2 days I have to shave my beard, otherwise I you know, and you know, you try to, so that's a certain kind of attachment to our body. But the more we attach to our body, the more pain it causes to ourselves. If we look deeply, this is what I'm trying to say, is external. It's called a lot of, but doesn't mean that we try to neglect our body, you know. We take good care of our body without attachment. Can we do that? Can we take good care of our body without attachment? That's the question. Without attachment. Yes, we do. It's kind of, in Buddhism, we call it kind of moderate, you know, path. You can be, you know, like take a very self hygiene, or you know, that's kind of a certain thing that we have to take care of, but so that our body can be healthy. But at the same time, is we don't have to like attachment to that, and that kind of attachment does lead to rebirth. This can be either low rebirth or middle rebirth or high rebirth. It depends on your mind. And especially when you go deeply into study Tibetan Buddhism, if we read the Book of Death, they say that the people who have a lot of attachment to the body, then the time of death, then it's really hard for them to leave this body, and then it's hard for them to take the next rebirth. And the more you attach to this body, then if you're not able to take birth for next life, and then you just hang around, your consciousness just hang around, and that's why we have the hungry ghosts.
What?
Hungry ghosts?
Hungry ghosts?
Yes. You never heard that of that?
No. Oh.
Hungry ghosts. But the ghost is very hungry. As I do that hungry ghost offering every night, every afternoon. Offer food. Food here, this is kind of physical food, some rice, some sauce, some water, but the main thing is the mind. Because hungry ghosts here can be die. That we already die, we can become a hungry ghost because we attach too much to our body, and our consciousness is just hang around, that we are not able to take birth, rebirth. So we become a hungry ghost in that sense. But because we are hungry of many other things, hungry because our desire is so strong, so we thirsty of that kind of attachment. But that is talking about the people who deceased. But what about the people who are still alive? They are hungry ghosts, alive hungry ghosts. Did you ever see that?
No.
You never see?
Uh-uh.
In each of us, we can be a hungry ghost. For example, if we are hungry for love, right? But we cannot get it. And you become, day by day, you become a hungry ghost yourself. Can you ever, because we look deeply, we can be a hungry ghost. For example, you are desire to get something and you never get it, right? You never get it, and that kind of desire become getting very intense. That kind of hungry, you're hungry for that, and you cannot be alive, but you can become a ghost.
Because you're not here right now,
because
not mindful,
not mindful, but because you know, get what you expect. So you're hungry, you're thirsty for that. For example, you are trying to get a beautiful clothes, for example, but you don't have the money to buy that clothes. So day by day, you just hungry to get that kind of clothes, expect to get that kind of clothes. And one day you haven't, even the time that you die, you still don't get it. You don't attain what you need. So are you hungry for that? Are you hungry? So that's in Buddhism we call hungry goals. And you die and you just, your desire, your consciousness just keep after that, attached after that. You become hungry goals. So that's kind of attachment.
Isn't there the other description where with the small straw?
Yep.
So the hungry goats are so hungry, so thirsty that they can only drink out of this teeny straw.
Yeah.
Because of a lack of openness.
Their thought in the Buddhist scripture, they say that this kind of hungry goat, they have very small throat, just like needle. Just like needle. So that because they're hungry to the degree that their stomach is so big, but their throat is so small, just like needle. So they're never able to fulfill that. To feel that. So we have in a Buddhist afternoon I have to chant the mantra, the loving mantra. So to open the throat of the hungry ghost. So that they can, and then I have to say the mantra of transforming. So, for example, I have a piece of rice, but it's even the small, but their throat is too small to swallow that, and the food is so it's kind of solid, so they cannot eat it. So we have to recite the mantra so that mantra can transform that piece of rice or into nectar. Into water, so that we can, so the hungry ghost can swallow that. So can swallow that nectar. So that nectar is the nectar of love. That's what in Buddhism we say the nectar of love. And especially today, our world, that many people are hungry of love. Right? Even yourself, ourselves. We're hungry of love. That's why we look for a partner, right? And then you don't fulfill that. And many couples, they don't fulfill that when they come together. And they just keep look after that. Look after, just keep look after. Run after that kind of distant happiness. See, distant of love. And even in our family, you know, family. So that's why many children, they even though you offer them love, but they don't able to swallow that. You see, that your children, you offer them love, but they're not able to receive it. That means their throat is too small, so cannot able to embrace that love. And that's why they left home. And then it's many nowadays, many children left home because of they are longing for some kind of love. Even in their family, they don't receive, their parents offer them love, but they are not able, they don't have the capability to receive that kind of love because the capacity to receive is too small. So they have to leave home, right? And to find some, they thought that they can find somewhere, they can go out there to attain that love, right? And then the more they run, that's why they become a hungry ghost. Still alive. And if you go to the juvenile prison, you can see that. I go to the juvenile in Golden and to offer not before, when I was in Boulder, at when I was at Naropa University. So once a month, I go to I went to Golden, the juvenile prison jail, to offer meditations, and I met many teenager who are from very rich family. Mostly the one that go into that jail, juvenile jail, mostly the rich child. And I was surprised. So I have a chance to sit down with them and to guide them a little bit of meditations and share with them. So I asked them, what is the reason you've been here? Asked them their family situations, and most of them, they come from rich family. And they share that they was longing for something. Even though their family, their parents was rich, the family were rich, but their parents don't have time for them. They mostly run after, their parents run after money. So the parents don't have time to sit down and to share some heartfelt with the children. So they go out and looked. They thought of their friend, and then they go out with they go to look for friends at the same magnetic, you know, same level, same frequencies. So mostly they are in fall into marijuana, the addicts into marijuana, to drugs, to gangs. That's what mostly they find. And they found their daughter, their family. They found a group of friends so that they can share together. And they lost the direction. They don't have direction in life. The family very rich, parents very rich, but they don't have any direction in life. They are very confused in life. See? You can see them, they have everything. But internally, in their mind, they lost. They lost. So that's kind of a hungry ghost we see in our society. We can, if you look deeply, you can see in our society we have many hungry ghosts. Hungry ghosts. And we look deeply and sometimes we see that, oh, ourselves as a hungry ghost. You never see that yourself as a hungry ghost? Because you run after something. But you don't fulfill that. Sometimes I look at myself and I'm surprised too. You know? Yeah. So that's just the practice, to come back and look at ourselves. Whether ask ourselves whether we are hungry ghosts or not. Sometimes we are, but we don't know. Because we live in illusions. In illusions. Very much. So that is the way that the Buddha invites us to come back, to look at ourselves. So the more we attach to our body, we better look back and see what are we lacking. Okay? So the practice is to return. Buddhism is not to teach you something out there, you know that. Buddhism is not to teach to go to else to other space and look for happiness. No. Buddhism, the Buddha teaches us, is to return, to discover our own planet in ourselves. That's what Buddha did for 250 years, 2,600 years ago. We look at the history, back at the history of the Buddha, the autograph of the Buddha, and we see. At the beginning, he set out and he go and study with many teachers, many teachers. But finally, he have to go back to himself, return to himself, and sit at the Bodhi tree and reflect on himself. So if we have more look back, and if we have more characters of Hungry Ghosts, that means we have been running externally. And once we hungry and we never feel, our longings. How long? We have so many things that we long for. We long for happiness, we long for joys. And that's why this world, we all, everybody look for a partner. You see? Everybody, if you don't be a monk, then you have to look for someone. It's hard to be celibate. Right?
Not too hard.
Not too hard? At a certain time in your life. A certain time in your life. A certain time in your life.
So far I've had no trouble.
A certain time in your life. Look for something to attach on. See? Our minds always look for something to attach or to grasp on something. When you sit down in meditation, you see that very clearly. If your mind is calm, if your mind is at some moment that your mind is there, you can see that your mind is very grasping. You have to truly look and you can see that. We always, constantly, our mind is constantly attaching or grasping to something. Otherwise it feels empty. So that's why we afraid of emptiness. We are very afraid of emptiness. We have to hold something. Otherwise you feel vacant in your heart. So we have to attach to something externally, mostly externally. When you attach to something, some kind of expectation, you know, especially now, this month we have holidays, so sometimes we are very tired. Yeah, you see holiday is, the purpose of holiday is to rest. But as a self, at ourselves, can you able to rest? No, your mind, you look at your mind is not at rest at all. We have so many expectations externally. We have a lot of gift, you know, like expectation, you know, like, so when you able to fulfill yourself and let all that expectation go. Holiday now is, there is more stress because of that kind of expectations, that kind of attachment to that attachment to the expectation. And that's why where we lose ourselves. You see that? We create that and then we lose ourselves in that. When I sit down and I see all this clearly in myself, when I was in college and this holiday or friend gift, oh man, you know, we have to always out thinking to buy what kind of gift and family, friend, and it just feel tired. I don't know if you feel tired or not, and then in those days, I feel so tired to, you know. So how can, and I lose myself too in that, you know. We expect other to give us some gift and then other expects us to give some gift. And we play in the game so that we can lose ourselves into that game, you see? And that's how our society construct itself. Construct in a way that so that we make ourselves busy and we lose ourselves, we tire ourselves. we burn ourselves up in all these things. You see? All these things. And we see, and then we live mostly, we live in illusion. You see here, the illusion has come from here. We thought that all this brings us joy and happiness. Isn't that an illusion? It's momentarily happiness. And then we blame ourselves. But the Buddha see all this. We're not able to rest on a holiday. Sometimes we say that, oh, I have guests, friends, family come, so that it should bring joy and harmony, but it's opposite. Every time you have guests, your mind is, you stress out. I experience that every time I have guests. I experience that. So that's, you have to, when you practice, you have to look for the truth. Because on the spiritual path, we have, otherwise we deceive ourselves.
What are you going to have, you know, and they want everything planned.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm feeling that tug of like, and we have school to catch up on, work to do still because we have run a small business. And so there's all that stuff. And I'm real, and I get hung up with like, I want the house made and all that stuff.
See?
Yes. But I also realize that part of me realizes that it's really the energy in the house that matters, not if it's all clean, but if we're relaxed and enjoying each other and able to create space for everybody. And so but still wondering like how to deal with my mom's anxiety about having, you know, not wasting time washing dishes, although you can wash dishes and enjoy the time together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not having to cook or plan each meal. Or go shopping, but you can, that a shopping trip can allow a couple people to have time together. So how to honor her needs and yet not get caught up with meeting all of them because that's stressful. So not practice.
So yeah, so that, you know, and when we have to look back and see, how do we create our environment so that we can provide the opportunities for the seeds of peace to germinate.
Break, and you need a break, send her up my house.
Yeah!
So what I'm sharing this is to look at the reality of ourselves, you know, the reality of practice, so that we can create the space for the enlightenment or for the seeds of awakening. To be planting the seeds in that space. So coming back that I was talking about attachment to our body. And that's why we're always busy with this body. See? We are very much busy with this body. Everybody, it's no exceptional. That's what we work for the whole life, is to for this attachment of the body. Have you ever thought of that?
Not sure you understand.
So you've been working very tirelessly for this body, right? To take care of this body. Are you? Are we? Mm-hmm. Even we're busy to feed this body. This is a kind of attachment. So the question is, how do we have a moderate so that we can have time to look deeply, to see the nature of this body? Because this body, you know, one day have to be sent back to the earth. Right? Sent back to the earth. So how do we work and live so that we can really have a sense of tranquility while we have this body? This body. Because you know this body one day is deteriorate. And that's true. You cannot run away from it. And when the consciousness left this body, you become a corpse, dead body. You couldn't move. You couldn't twist or you couldn't turn. Either you go to cremation, or in Tibet, what they do is they feed the bird, right? They feed the bird. They cut body part by part and feed the bird. Yes, in Tibet, because they so high, and the ground is only boulders and rocks, so they couldn't dig, and they don't have wood to burn. So what they do is to, when you die and they live for a certain day, so the consciousness left the body, and they bring it out to the area. So there's a group of people that usually do that, is to chop your body by piece and feed to the virtual bird, jackal, and their bone is the granite, and they mix it with bark flour. They also feed the bird. It's still now. If you go to Tibet, you can see that now.
Tung Kung,
Tung Kung movie, Tibetan movie, yeah?
Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Yeah, Tibetan Book of the Dead.
It was a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And the translation that the Tibetan man was saying was, we don't know why you Westerners get so worked up over death, because it's part of life. And so, you know, one of the things I do to remind myself that I have to take care of this body so that it serves me for as long as it can, is to just look at that sutra that talks about the decay of a body,
mm-hmm.
from the time you die until,
yep.
until there's nothing left but bones. And you know, I think about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that helps me remember that, mm-hmm. okay, I'm going there anyway, but I need to take care of it as best I can.
Yeah, so the question is, how to take care of your body without attachment? So when you look in awe, read all this sutra and see all this practice, is to transform your attachments. You can live a good life without attachment. Like, just like many teachers in Buddhist teachers, they do that. They can have a wholesome life without attachment. They use this body as a raft this body is a raft that carry you to the shore of peacefulness, joy, internal joys, internal peacefulness. But if you intensely attach to that, then you create immeasurable amount of suffering for yourself. And that the vernacular people do that, right? But we all here is some certain degree of practitioner, so we should look deeply into that, so that you can transform your attachment. Attachment is the most it's caused a lot of pain. That's what it is. And there is people ask me, say, how come I've been practicing a long time but I couldn't able to transform my attachment? very little transformation on my attachment. This is a good impermanence is a good tool to work with attachments. It's the antidote to attachment. If you look deeply into impermanence, impermanent, even thoughts, idea, also impermanent. So when sometimes we attach to our idea too, you know, if you say something, you bring out something on the table and somebody say, change your idea, you become very reactive, isn't that? It's, you know, very active. And very angry with that. That's my idea, it's me, it's my idea. And this creates a chaotic. So we have to look deeply into the teaching of impermanence. Every day, you should contemplate impermanence every day. If you deeply root and experience some direct experience with impermanence, you are a very open-minded person. Very open mind and light heart, because you see things impermanent, everything is impermanent. But you have to, you cannot say that just only mechanically say it, you have to directly experience that. You will be laughed at. And once you're able to experience directly experience that, you can see the connected of things, of the nature of everything. There is a teaching of the Buddha, he said that in this earth, elephant have the most, the biggest footprint. Right? Elephant have the biggest footprint. And he say that, and then he compare that to impermanence. Impermanence is the biggest, the greatest teachings, just like the footprint of the elephant, if you can see anything. One of the sutra, he say that, compare. Once you're able to root and experience the teaching of impermanence, you become a very light person. You can accept everything that happened. Everything that happened. Because that, you know that my body is going to change, my mind is going to change, everything is going to change. Then whatever is calm is going to change. Whatever chaotic is calm, it's going to change. It's not stay there forever. Then you become very light. You become very open. You are not very sticky. Itchy. Where we're crouching, because we don't see, we don't experience that. When you see that, you change your attitude right away. You become a very loving person. And then you very light and very easy going with your body. You take care of your body, but very easy. Very easy. And then you become very beautiful. You don't have to. So you become a very beautiful person. But you have to experience that directly for yourself. And these teachings, many the teachings of non-attachment, many, many teachers teach on that. And we have listened a million times, millions time already. But how much can we experience that, or how much we transform is the question. So the question is the transformation. How much do you get transformation on the path? And some people say that I practice so long, but why I'm still very stubborn? Because and then it's go back to attachment, because you still have so much attachment to even attach to our way of practice. It's still not attachment. You see that? You have, so it's go from cross to the sorrow here. Attached to, even attached to which teacher, still not attachment. If someone says something bad about that teacher, and you become not very happy, you see, and you become egoistic because you say that this is the only teacher that's good, you see, and then your mind is closed. You see, you've been attached to the good things, even attached to the teaching of the Buddha. You have to go to that point and have to transform that. The teaching of the Buddha, attached to Buddhism, is still not good too. It's the only skillful means for you to transform the attachment. So if you attach to the Dalai Lama, it's still the same attachment. If someone say bad about, so your attitude toward that. You say if someone was to say mock the Dalai Lama, how do you, as a Buddhist monk, and how do you react to that? You see? You can have a calm attitude, say, it's okay, he's human. I still, even whatever you say, my respect for him, it doesn't change. But my attachment for him, it doesn't change, you know, it's changed. So, you see, that's you can see the transformation in your mind. So if someone was, you love someone dearly, if someone was to, put down that person or mocking that person, if you have an attitude of negative attitude, you have to look back and see. You see, what is your attitude toward that? Doesn't mean you don't care for that person. You care for that person, but you haven't come out to and seize the realities. What that person says is my person. So the criticism can do you good thing is to test you. Test your practice. How much further you on the path. You know? So sometimes criticism is negative, but it's good for, it's a medicine for the people who are further on the path. So it's test their attachment to that. Whatever they practice. So if you are a lover of Buddhism, if someone say bad thing about Buddhism, then if you was to do something harmful, then you not practice Buddhism. You see, you not practice Buddhism. Buddhism is to bring some non-violence, love and compassion. So to test your attitude toward that, toward attachment to that. So that's why if some, for example, if like Muslim, if someone knows to say that, oh, Muslim is something, it's negative impression of Muslim. If you're a real practitioner, you should look back and see what kind of practice, what kind of Muslim practitioner are you? You know? So is that. So that's why attachment to anything is create suffering. To religions, to persons, to objects, it doesn't matter. To this body. It's all create pain and suffering. So when we look, we practice meditation, we look deeply, how much, what certain degree, how much have you able to transform your attachment? If someone was to criticize your practice, then you attach to your practice, then you become a very upsetting reacting aggressively, then you have to look back. We have to look back. So Buddhism is something for us, it's teachings for us. It's a skillful mean for us to transform ourselves. All of this is a skillful mean. So when you look at that, then you become very light on your path. So I talk about that because that is leading to one like the enlightenment factors, awareness factors. So mental and physical fluencies. You see that word before? So mental and physical fluency is one of the factors that leading to awakening, leading to enlightenment. So when your body is and your mind is not at ease, then it's really hard for you to further on the path of enlightenment. So that's why previously I was talking about attachment to the body. Because when we attach too much to the body, then the body cannot be at rest itself, at ease itself, fluencies. So on the path of practice to serve sentient beings, sentient being here is including yourself. When I say the word sentient beings, it's including yourself, ourself. Sentient beings, the path. That is the path of great sentient beings, or great beings. The path of Bodhisattva. And you know Bodhisattva, they can do, they practice generosities of the body. Generosities is the practice of giving. Generosities, practice of sharing what they have, sharing their time, sharing their practice. They don't hold it for themselves. Even enlightenment, to share enlightenment for all sentient beings. So that's one of the practice on the sixth parameter. The first parameter here is the ultimate practice of Bodhisattva. The sixth parameter is the practice, Lukdo. The practice that brings you to the shore of enlightenment. Generosity is the first one. So mental and physical sharing. Mental here, they share the way of practice, for example. They share the wisdom that they have, right? They don't hold that. They see the path, they don't hold it for themselves, right? They share that. The more you share, the more you have. Do you know that? The more you share, the more your heart is open. That is the practice of letting go. That is the practice of equanimity. You see? You see the interconnected of the practice here. The practice of generosity is very much connected with the practice of letting go.
Letting go?
Letting go. Equanimity. They are not separate. They are very much related to one another. So when you're able to practice generosity, your mind is at ease. You don't afraid that people want to what? To steal your properties. You open for everybody. You share. And you have that experience when you share your house with your guests, your friend, and you feel that, oh, you do something, right? You bring some joy to them. See, you share, the more you share, you see your heart is open when you have guests coming. And you try to do your best to host the guests, even though you're a little bit tired. But you feel happy, right? You share. Even holiday, we will share, give, you know, like that, we share. Look at the positive side, then you look at the negative side, you look at both sides here. You share your time, you share the value that you have, but somehow you burn out that. So that's the negative side, you'll be burning out. But if you look at the positive side, people share. So the peacefulness of the body and peacefulness of the mind is one of the factors that lead to enlightenment. But we have to be wise in our practice so that we can bring some peacefulness, some pliancies to our body and our mind. Without that quality, it's hard to further our path, dwell on the path. If your body and your mind is exhausted, you will be drop out. Just like drop out of school. You burn out because you drop out of school. Alright? You drop out of the path. You drop out of the path. Because you physically and mentally you are not at ease, at peace. So you have to have that in order to share. If you don't have that, how can you share? Right? You can share your stick, exhaustion. You can share that, but not many people are happy to receive that. Yeah. not many people are happy to receive that.
So how do you get there?
How to get there?
To that place where mind and body are.
Mind, body, so that you have to know. You have to have mean mindfulness while you're doing that. You see? So the mindfulness is the next factors that bring you that kind of awareness. You ask yourself, how can I do this? Ask yourself a question, how can I do this? So at the same time, I can bring tranquility to my body and my mind. But at the same time, I can serve the people. The Bodhisattva asks a question so that I can continue my path of serving. So you have guests coming to your house, you're serving. So you ask yourself, how can I do that while I serve my guests, but at the same time I feel the tranquility, the peacefulness, the joy in my body, in my mind. Here it has to be external, not to be pretend to be happy and to be joy. If you pretend, you put a mask on, you don't last long. Yes, you don't last long on the path. You have to be authentic with yourself. Authentic with yourself. Whatever you do, you have to be authentic with yourself. Otherwise, we deceive ourselves. You see? And we do that, we deceive ourselves every day. Because we don't authentic with our practice. So ask yourself, how much do I authentic really be with myself, authentic with myself while serving other people, so that I can further myself on the path? Because the spiritual path is not a one day or two day. There's many, many days, many months, whole life, and many life. And many life. In Buddhism, we don't believe that there is only one lifetime. We believe in in the many lifetimes. The Buddha not only practiced this lifetime in order to become the awakened one. He had been practiced many lifetimes, accumulation. And that teaching, you can experience that teaching for yourself, because all the teaching of the Buddha is the invitation for you to ask yourself a question, and invitation for you to do the experiment within yourself, so you can see that and taste that. Every teaching of the Buddha have to be tested by yourself, by your own, by the practitioner. Have to be tested. So in the length of time, So if you say that, oh, the teaching of the Buddha is about rebirth, and experience it yourself every day, and see the surrounding, the environment, whether is there any phenomenon that is kind of rebirth, and even our own thoughts, you say, our own thoughts come back every time, you know, same thought come back many, many times, you see, and old thoughts. So that kind of rebirth, that kind of circling assistance. So experience that for yourself. So whatever you do on the path, you have to test it and experiment that, and see the how is your mental, how is your mind, and how is your body feel. So on the path of practice of Bodhisattva path, you have to do that for yourself. So mental and physical practices is one of the mental factors. When you study Buddhism, we see many factors that contribute. Slowly we explore and we develop and we look deeply to see different factors. Every time that's what we study, you know. That factor is this kind of quality in our that's kind of qualities that we experience in our practice. Okay? You can feel, you can really feel your body and your mind when you practice, whether it's at ease or whether it's in turbulence, you know. And sometimes your body is in turbulence. And that's why Nicole said that last few days her body is not very, it's kind of turbulence, right? So just look at it. What kind of factor that causes that turbulence? Sometimes it's internal factors, sometimes it's external factors. The weather, the outside, the internal weathers. So that is where mindfulness comes in, to allow us to see that, to see, directly feel and see that, what is going on in our body, in our mind. If the as a practitioner, if we don't see that, then the more we walk on the path, the more we feel depressed, the more we feel lost, right? So we have to see that and experience that for ourselves.
Is it necessary to keep looking at why? I've been playing a little bit with, doesn't matter why I feel like this, I just have to remember that this is temporary, and why I feel this way isn't what's important. What's important is that I remember that this feeling, whatever the feelings are I'm having, it's temporary, and just stay with it until it passes, and then just let it go. I mean, is it really necessary to look at the whys?
Once in a while you have to ask why. You see, when we ask why, we see the cause of it. You see what is the cause of that, but one is what you have to get it away, so you don't be obsessed by why, but you just raise the question there, and then as you know it's temporary, but at least you know it's temporary, but you know the cause of it, so you can see, look into it to get some transformation method to work with it. You see, that's the reason I ask why. You say, well, why I practiced so long, but I didn't see the transformation. I don't experience transformation. So you see, and then you look, ask that, and you see, go back, maybe I got some stuck there. Something is not going right. But just ask it. Just raise the question. So there's some insight will become and embrace that. But you know, as you know, that it's temporary also. The temporary is good, so that you don't have to say that it's impermanent, I cannot change it. So you have to develop an attitude, say, it's temporary, it's permanent, impermanent, but you see, you have to see the root cause of it. So once you're able to realize the root cause of it, then change comes easily.
Okay, so if I've gotten to a place of meditation practice where I feel like I'm stuck,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like I'm regressing instead of progressing,
mm-hmm.
is that because I'm not asking why?
You get stuck because sometimes you because of the strong habit is one thing. But if you ask why, then you see the cause of it. Once in a while, you have to ask that. Once in a while, you know? You don't just only say, oh, thing is temporary. You don't obsess with that. So you alternate the practice, you see? Alternate. So you don't get bored at your practice. You have to be, your practice always have to be new. So that way you don't get bored in your practice. You say, if you say, oh, this is, and you just got stuck to that, and it's got boring. Nicole?
This time, when I wasn't feeling good,
mm-hmm.
I did ask why, and I really couldn't see any specific answer, except that I've been around a lot of sick people, and maybe I'm just not as well as I could be. But the one thing it contributed to my practice was I was very crabby, and I didn't even know I was at first. And so then I just went, well, I'll use my crabbiness for practice. Try to, whenever I was going to come out with crabbiness, it's like, breathe. Try to stop being crabby, but I really haven't figured out, except for that maybe I've been around a lot of sick people and I'm just not in as good a state, too tired or something.
So when you ask the word why, it shines some light into that. Some wisdom into it. But don't get obsessed with that things, see? Don't get obsessed with that why. Move on. So when you move on, that means you see some, you have already had some openness. And you can see, when you have openness, you can see some transformation. Some transformations. Because when you have awareness in your body, you can see that what kind of factor that contribute to that. You see, sometimes it's the weather outside. Like I feel my body whenever the spring comes, and I feel my body's kind of pain because I see the earth is rotating and many energy is birthed from the trees. And I see that, and I accept that, and I work with that, you see? Because you know your body is very much connected with the earth, because this body is made up of the earth. And once the earth is rotate, you feel in your body, but unless you have some kind of awareness. So myself, whenever spring comes, I feel some change in myself because of the growth of the tree, the spurt of the tree. And when winter comes, it feels different. Sometimes it feels depressed too, you know, like sometimes, you know, someday I feel like that too. But I see, I recognize that. And then I don't let myself get stuck into that. When I do that, I have that thoughts, then I change my attitude. Either I run in or I get some Dharma talk of Thay or Dalai Lama, and sooner to boost my energy. So that's the practice. You get yourself out of the trap. Otherwise, we trap ourselves in that stagnant weather. So you have to know that, so that you can, on your path, you have to be wise a little bit. Insight, bring your insight in. So today I just want to share you with, first thing is attachment to the body. And look deeply to see what kind of things. Everybody have different kind of attachment, okay? Nobody is the same kind of attachment. Each of own, we have our own kind of attachment. And look deeply what kind of attachment that you have. And you know yourself and you see yourself. And practice to day by day to let it to transform that. So once you're able to transform that, you slowly your body feels different, and you feel some kind of ease, some kind of pliancy in your body, in your mind, and that is the factor that are leading you on the path of awakening. So two things I say with tonight: attachment, and liberate that attachment. You have to find the skill that fit you. No one have the same skill that, because we have different thoughts, we create our own different karma. So find the right skill, the right method that work for you. That's why when we practice, we become very creative. Very creative. You have to be creative in your path. Very creative. To make yourself feel joy on the path, so that you can move along. Don't get so conservative on your path. Because insight is very creative. Insight. When you have the insights, have different skillful means. That's why in Buddhism we have 84,000. If it's not creative, how can it get 84,000 dharma skillful means to practice? Have to be creative. 84,000, because we have 84,000 kind of illness. 84. Imagine our mind is a creator. It's create all this. So the Buddha say that we have 84,000 skillful means, kind of medicines for you to treat this kind of 84,000 illness. Then it's creative. It's very creative. It's not a fix. So it's fun to you know, it's fun to, when you look at that, you know, life is open for us. We never have a pessimist attitude toward life, even though we have a lot of suffering. But we say, suffering, I will turn you into flower. Yeah. And then you become, you're very active in your path. And so you never feel bored. Always.
Never bored of suffering.
Yeah, never bored with suffering. You never bored with your suffering if you are very artistic. You know, that's why the Buddha say mind is a creator. It's creating many things. So mind is very artistic. It's a creator. So that's why it's very joy and very joyful on the path. Insight is never, is it not a stagnant energy inside always. It's moving, moving. And our energy is always moving. But because we have a stagnant energy, because we don't know how to transform. How to transform. And we got stuck in our mind, you see? That's why many, there is people that we have. They don't able to get out of that kind of trap in the mind, you know? Because they don't know that mind is artistic, mind is the creator. So they get stuck, and they become ill. And when your mind is not liberate, it's easy to get ill. That's why people get mentally retarded. You see that? Mentally retarded. But if we know, then we able to get ourselves out of that trap right away. So don't let you get your energy get stagnant. You know, we have to let the energy flow. Okay, so we will stop here. Anybody have any questions? So just share with you one thing today: attachment and the nana and the. Physical tranquility. When your mind is flow, you can see the connective of everything, connectiveness of everything. But when your mind gets stagnant, you close your door of seeing. And you can see that in spiritual teacher, they once they attain a certain freedom in the path, and whatever they talk makes sense, because they see the connectedness of everything. You can see Tay, whatever he talk makes sense, because his mind is flow. He see beyond the duality. Just like Dalai Lama. But we all have the capability, potentials to do that. You can talk one thing and you can talk forever. You can see forever. It makes sense. Some sense. So you have to practice more and see that. And you don't get stuck. Okay. If you study physics, you see the energy, right? Physics is the energy. Physics. Physics is about the energy, how energy flow. And attractions of things. You go to further on physics, you see that mostly about energy and attractions, just like magnetic. I took some few courses of physics. So. And you see all the anger, all the attachment is energy. You see that? Anger is energy, attachment is energy, desire is energy. And once you see that, you see the connection with physics, math. It's very connection. Math, physics, chemistry, biology, all that. You see, able to see that, and that all is flow. So Tai, he can talk about physics, he can talk about math, he can talk about biology, but it makes sense to us. Makes sense to us. Okay, so once again, stop here. We practice meditation together. So I will invite Sadhvel to conclude our sharing here today. So thank you for your listen. So a topless body in your mind. So thank you. We take a few minutes.